Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be moderating today's webinar on best practices in negotiating payments, which is being brought to you by PDC Flow. All collection calls are different. A collector never knows what an individual is going to say or how he or she will react when the phone is picked up. Collectors have to be ready for anything while also trying to persuade the individual about the importance of paying off the debt in question. Today, in a webinar sponsored by PDC Flow, we have a panel of experts from across the credit and collection industry who are here to walk through different scenarios and share their insights and perspectives into how collectors can become better negotiators. Anyone in business, this is a great skill that is in constant need of practice and improvement. Now, if you've listened to any of my webinars before, this is usually the spot where I say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. Not going to do that today. Instead, what I'm just going to do is, while I have everybody's attention, I'm going to thank PDC Flow, all of my sponsors, the three speakers we have with us today, and all the speakers. This is the 85th webinar that I've done this year, which is 30 more than we did in 2018. So I just want to thank everybody for their support and their participation. This has been a great year in terms of content and education, and I'm thrilled to have been able to deliver this much to everybody and look forward to doing even more next year. So I just want to thank everybody for that before, because if I do it at the end, everybody's hanging up and nobody listens. So now let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Megan Bryant is the Director of Operations and Client Support at Credit Collection Partners. She started as a collector at CCP 9 years ago and has since moved her way up to her current position. She is responsible for all employee incentives and all operations within the company. Beth Conklin has more than 24 years in the collection industry, starting out as a collector, team leader, and supervisor of collections before moving into the role as a manager of training and regulatory compliance. She's currently an account executive with State Collection Service. Prior to that, Beth was the director of training and development at McCarthy, Burgess, and Wolf. Beth has the TSP and CCCO designations, as well as is a certified instructor for AC International. She earned the Fred Kirshner Award in March 2013 and 2015, as well as being recognized as the ACA Certified Instructor of the Year for 2012 and 2016. Mike Hiller joined American Profit Recovery in 2005 and has served as Vice President of Collections since 2012. He is an ACA scholar, as well as a licensed collection manager in Michigan, and has served as a subject matter expert for the Michigan Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs. While attending Central Michigan University, Mike earned degrees in entrepreneurship, psychology, and philosophy. Following graduation, he pursued postgraduate studies at the University of Detroit Mercy, graduating in 2007 with top honors and a master's degree in psychology. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. To answer a question that's already been submitted, this event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available later today or over the weekend on AccountsRecovery.net's webinar recordings page. Finally, I want to ask everybody to take a minute or reserve a minute and fill out the survey that should pop up on your screen after the webinar is over today. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Your participation and your feedback helps me develop content that's what you're looking for, such as the topic we have for you today, and to find the speakers you want to hear from, which is definitely the case with the people we have with us today. With that, let's launch into our discussion. We're going to do things a little differently today. Rather than discussing topics and questions and answers, what we've got for you is a series of scenarios that we'll put to our panel and get their feedback and their insights into how they would handle different scenarios with respect to negotiations between collectors and individuals on the phone. Our first scenario is this. Submitted. One thing we deal with is the consumer who says yes, but offers a small payment arrangement, and my collectors are quick to take it. I think collectors have reduced RPC rates, so when they get someone to offer money, they jump on it. We have been talking about pushing past yes, similar to pushing past a no. I am interested in ideas on how to push past the yes and negotiate for large payments. Mike Hiller, since you're on my screen, I'm going to give you the first crack at how you would handle that scenario.
I'm here, and I do agree. I think it's a scenario that comes up quite a bit. So instead of, it's what I want to do is have the conversation that I want to have, and that's what I want for the collectors too. So, you know, not how long do you need to resolve this, but you rephrase that. So the debt's $700, how short are you from the balance, right? So another thing that comes up quite a bit along these lines is, you know, what's the minimum payment that you'll accept? Don't answer that question. It's a trap. Number one, you don't want to be the first to make the offer. Number two, you don't want your collectors, you know, pulling a number out of thin air. There is no minimum, right? It's all contextual based on their situation. So that's the discussion that I want to have. I want to speak in terms of time frames as opposed to dollar amounts. I want to get the consumer to earn the payment plan instead of giving it away. You know, they say they can afford $20 a month. Well, let's look at their debt to income ratio and see what they qualify for, right? So when I say earn it, I'm not telling the consumer you need to earn it, but between the lines, I'm saying, let's get you qualified, meaning what? You need to earn it. Another thing along those topics is someone who gets paid weekly or biweekly should almost always have payments that mirror that. There's nothing worse than a monthly payment plan on the 15th and they get paid twice a month or biweekly. You know, you're going to have more NSF checks and probably smaller payment plans if you do $20 a month versus, you know, if they offer, you know, $50 a month, you can easily turn that into $35 semi-monthly, which can be considerable difference, you know, depending on how many payments you're collecting each collector per month. So those are just some of the things that we try to instill in new collectors during training, and then during training and development, they're topics that we continue to discuss. So that's a great scenario.
And
go ahead. Yep,
this is Beth. Hi, thanks everybody. And thank you, Mike, for having me back today. Appreciate it. So I agree with everything that Mike is saying. That is one of the biggest challenges too, is the consumer will tend to throw off the collector by saying, well, what's the minimum you'll accept? And it kind of throws off the entire talk off, right? And then the collector sometimes will just grab a random number out of the sky and, you know, just throw out a blanket number. And kind of to piggyback with what my colleague was just talking about, is one thing that I like to implement when I'm training collectors on their talk off is trying to make sure that, A, you get that financial summary of what the actual financial picture looks like from the consumer side, and then taking that balance that they owe and working at either coming up with a down payment or dividing that balance up into equal subsequent payments, right? So instead of just pulling out a $25, $50, $100 payment plan, let's really look at a financial summary. Let's divide that balance up into equal installments. Try to set up those post-dated transactions if you're able to, because we all want to we all want to know there's a means to the end, right? And so if I know that I've got a $382 balance and we can break that up into four or five or six equal installments, I know as the consumer, my payment plan is going to be over by June or by May of next year. So I know come that point, that money is then going to become available to me as my undisposable income for another bill or for something else. So not just setting up that blanket $50 or $100 payment that's just going to drag this on indefinitely. So that's something that I always like to incorporate too, is getting it divided up into an equal installment plan.
Yeah, and Megan, thank you, Mike, for having me again also. Just to kind of piggyback on that, I stress all the time to our collectors that you have to get something today. You have to get some sort of down payment today, because once somebody has made that payment and made that first step, they're more likely to continue. Now they're vested. Now they're already putting towards it, and you know, it keeps them going. And then with that down payment, you know, that's how we sort of start strategizing on our payment plan. You know, can you put 20-30% down today? You know, depending on the balance, then maybe if you're needing lower, you know, monthly payments, we can get you there if we can get that down payment enough. And I think a lot of times, you know, if you start talking to them and how you can get them to where they have to be for their finances, then, you know, they're more grateful and they're more likely to continue to pay you every month.
Yeah, that's a good point too. I like the financial summary talk, and I like we call that a good faith payment is what we call that. Because there's nothing worse than scheduling a payment out 30 days, 40 days, and then 40 days later it bounces. Now you're really behind the eight ball.
Yeah, and then you're just spending valuable time, you know, tracking those people down again, you know, because once that payment breaks, we all know getting it back on track is you know, one of the bigger projects.
Well, and, you know, that kind of ties into what the scenario number one is referencing, right? So collectors want to reduce that right party contact, right? So you're looking at that first call resolution. So if we're asking those questions, we're getting that financial summary, we're negotiating and making it, you know, more of an earned process for that consumer patient, then A, you're going to hit that call strong, right? And we need to make sure that we're treating every contact as if that is the only time we're going to talk to the consumer or patient, because more so likely than not, it is. But if we are asking those right questions, we're negotiating something that makes sense and not just accepting that blanket payment to get them off the call, you know, get the call done, get your money on the board. You've established that relationship, like Megan said, you're going to have more of a rapport. They're going to be more likely to continue to work with you, especially if it's healthcare and they continue to have other accounts coming into your office. It's just going to set you up to continue to be able to build on top of that.
Great point. Those help, you know, like the accounts, like you said, the ones that are like revolving doors, you know, they get one or, you know, they get one paid, they get another one come in.
Frequent flyers.
Yes. Frequent flyers. Exactly. You know, if you've already worked with them in the past and you've helped them out, you know, you're more likely to be the one they're going to call to pay first.
Yep.
A question came in with regards to the debt to income ratio. How specific do you get?
I'll start this one off because this is, I mean, those of you out there in the world right now listening are probably familiar, if you know me, with my FNC, my full and complete information. I'm a big fan of full and complete information. And so I think that, there's guidelines that can be followed, right? So when you're talking to a consumer and they're saying, look, I can't afford to pay the full balance. I don't have that kind of money. There's just no way I can pay it in full. And then you're going to start working through your payment hierarchy, right? So can you offer a settlement? Do you want a 10 or 20% down payment and then monthly payments? Or is it a small enough balance where it's balance in full over two? And then I like to ask some very open-ended questions, such as, well, you know, so I can understand that you're not able to pay the full balance. So let me see what you qualify for. I do have some options available to you. So let me ask you a few questions. You know, so how much, you know, income do you have per month coming into the household? I like to say something like that, because if there's somebody that maybe they're single, maybe they do live with somebody, maybe they have somebody that lives with them and pays rent. So I like to leave it a little bit more open in general as to how much income is coming into the household. And then I like to ask, you know, so how much is your rent or mortgage? How much is your car payment? I like to be assumptive. So I'm leaving it an open door versus, do you pay rent or mortgage? Well, they're going to say, well, yeah. Okay. So how much is your rent or mortgage? So I like to be assumptive when I'm asking those open-ended, full and complete questions. And not to say that they're just going to be so willy-nilly to give you this information, right? Sometimes there's going to be some pushback. I mean, that's realistic. But at the end of the day, you are working with that consumer patient to accept something less than the full balance. And like my colleague Mike said, you know, it's an earned process, right? And so letting them know, hey, you know, I can get you some kind of arrangement, but in order to do so, I need to know what programs you qualify for. There's a couple options here. And then, you know, I kind of just like to ask those main things. I don't get as granular as what is your utility bills, how much is your electric, your water. I just kind of go for the big ones that are probably more important that are paid every month by that consumer patient. And then I try to look at that financial summary to see where we can get them as far as a payment plan. And it'll also give you an idea as if they're being honest with you or not, right? If they're telling you they get $1,000 a month in income, but their mortgage is $800 a month and their car payment is $500, that's a red flag to you as the collector that there's something not right here, right? And so you're going to want to drill down on that a little bit more. Interested in what Megan and Mike have to say?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Megan.
Yeah. And, you know, it is, I find that it's so easy for, you know, us that aren't sitting in the actual collector chair to say, okay, this is what you got to do. This is what you got to do. You know, I was there at one time. I'm sure most of us were. And, you know, you learn what's best, but I feel like stressing to the collectors that they need to spend more time getting this information is hard because, you know, it's like we said earlier, RPCs are so low anymore that I feel like, you know, when they get them on the phone, yes, I'll take it. Let's get another one. Yes, I'll take it. Let's get another one. And, you know, getting them to just slow down, take your time, talk to them, find out what's going on. You know, it's a little more difficult to get them to do, but that is something that I try to stress, you know, all the time is, hey, just take a few minutes. It's okay. There'll be more calls. You'll have more RPCs. I get that. But just take a few minutes and talk to them, because if you spend another minute, you know, they're going to lead you down a path where there's a whole nother solution that you didn't even know about. So I think that's huge, to spend a little time and kind of get a picture of what's going on with them.
Yeah, I would agree with everything Beth and Megan said. I would add too that, you know, we're starting off at a high level. So some of the things that were mentioned, mortgage, car, insurance, things like this. And then if you still think that your income, certainly, but if you still think you're getting lowballed, that's when you take the more granular approach, right? So you hit the high level stuff, they make their second offer. No, it's just a negotiating tactic, right? So you go back into some of the more specifics and try to fill in those gaps, and guess what happens? Inevitably, their third offer is what? It's higher.
Excellent. Well, great start. Love the conversation so far. Before we get any deeper into our discussion today, I just want to hit the pause button briefly and say a few words about the sponsor of today's webinar, PDC Flow. PDC Flow's payment hub offers a single platform for accounts receivable teams to quickly send an invoice, collect a credit, debit, or ACH payment, and obtain a signature in one simple and secure workflow. The software offers text, email, chat, and IVR payment channels, a customizable online payment portal, and robust reporting ideal for debt collection agencies, medical billing companies, hospitals, and healthcare organizations. Programming and customer operations for PDC Flow's national client base have been completed in-house in Ogden, Utah, since the company's founding in 2003. Once again, I want to thank Don, Hannah, and the team at PDC Flow for sponsoring today's event. Now let's sort of resume our discussion. Let's move on to scenario number two. Scenario number two, people who claim to not have money during the year but get a tax refund, and this is a December call. This is you and I, Mike, ready? Or no, sorry, this isn't you and I, Mike, sorry. This is another one. This is the collector, Mrs. Flores. I know you want to pay and money is tight right now and you want your family and grandkids to have a good Christmas. This bill is $2,500 and the orthopedic doctor is not going to see you again until it is paid. Are you expecting to go back in February? She says, yes, but I don't have $2,500. Collector, oh, I understand. You're used to getting a tax refund every year, right? She says, yes, usually about $3,000, but I have other bills to pay too. Collector, my client is offering a tax season discount of 35%. What if I could get you that discount in the beginning of January and you could settle this for $1,625? Then you could schedule your appointment for February and still have money left over. You could even file your taxes early and estimate the refund at H&R Block. They are in many Walmarts. Do you have a Walmart near you? Why, yes, and I have seen them in there before. Anyone want to comment and provide any feedback about that little exchange?
I'll start us off. So, you played that role very well. And
thank you. I was born to play it.
And it kind of ties in, actually, scenario number one, when myself and Mike and Megan were talking about asking those questions and getting that rapport built, because clearly in this example, this might be a frequent flyer patient of ours, right, where there's some kind of established relationship, I would assume, based on the answers from the patient. And so I think that this is a perfect example of making sure that you utilize all of the different money resources that are out there that patients or consumers may not even think about that they would be available to them, right? So it is December. Tax season is around the corner. You are starting to see advertisements for getting pre-approved, getting an estimate of your return, getting that money early on some kind of card that can be processed. And so starting to utilize those type of resources when you've got somebody who is saying, look, I can't afford to pay that. I don't have that balance. Again, looking at that tax refund, where they can go to file early or get an estimate, but also looking at other additional money resources that might be available. You know, a lot of patients or consumers have Christmas Club accounts. There seems to be a lot of healthcare on the call today, and so a lot of patients can use their HSA card and use it to pay their medical bill that's in collections, and they may not even realize that they can do that. They're so used to just paying a copay or picking up their prescriptions, they may not realize that paying a bill, a medical debt that's in collections, would be able to be used on that HSA card. You know, so looking at those type of options, you know, looking at 401k, looking at any other type of retirement plans that might be available. So these are all things that we need to keep our eyes and ears open for, these money resources, when we're asking those questions and trying to find the best solution that would benefit yourself, the client, and of course the consumer or patient.
And much like the income tax return, the HSA in a lot of companies, it depends on how their employer works, but a lot of companies, that money is available January 1, even though they're going to contribute over the course of the whole year. So that's something else to keep in mind, is if they plan on tucking away $1,000, $2,000, whatever it is, for the whole year, a lot of times they can spend it right now.
Yep, good point.
Yeah, and tax time, and I'm sure it's all collection agencies, you know, it's a huge time. You know, we make a, you know, a boatload of money Q1 from tax time, but we will start having people talk to us about it in October. You know, oh, well, when I get my taxes, you know, this is a big thing. When I get my tax return, I'll pay you. When I get my tax return. And we have a policy that, you know, that's fine. You want to, you know, you're strapped right now. We've got your picture. You know, you are pretty strapped. We get that. So what we do is we'll hold that, you know, till your tax time comes and your refund. But we do require payments until then, you know, and even if you are strapped and you honestly can't do any more than $25 a month, we require that $25 on time to hold till your tax return. You know, just again, to get people vested, to get them, you know, realizing, okay, they're going to work with me, you know, and when they get that money, hopefully we're the first people they call.
Kind of circling back to what our friend Mike said earlier with respect to a good faith payment, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I understand you can get access your W-2 online on January 3rd. So let's set up a good faith payment, whether it be $25, $50 to hold this open, and then we'll touch base on the 3rd and make sure you set that solidified time back. But that's a great point too, getting that good faith payment to start getting that rapport established.
Okay, excellent. Let's move on. Our next scenario isn't so much about negotiation as it is about sort of overcoming objections and stalls, but would like to maybe see if we can get some tips on how to handle that and maybe sort of negotiate at the same time. Our office handles medical debt. This presents different challenges than other types and unique because our clients want the patient to feel they can still return services. Most of our clients will not file suit. Some of the difficulties we have when discussing are divorced parent who takes a child to the physician and is registered as a legal guardian, but who wants to argue that the ex is supposed to pay the medical bills. The quality of care, overcoming the objection as they felt the outcome or service was not acceptable, keeping in mind that these objections were not raised prior to the client attempts or our prior attempts. This usually comes up on the first telephone contact. The amount of the bill is too high. They want to argue that the amount due is too much. Parents who want to discuss the non-minor child bills. Many parents get enraged that we cannot discuss the bill without permission. And finally, overwhelmed. Many of our regular payment plan debtors continue to accrue more medical bills than they can keep up with. They eventually default or cancel their plans because they see no end in sight. It is hopeless. Does anyone want to share any insights into any of those possible conversations?
Oh, the word hopeless just hurt my heart. It's never
I know.
So, you know, I think one thing that I think is critical when you discuss the overwhelmed stall or objection that is a challenge in our industry, many of our regular payment plan consumers, they just continue to accrue more medical bills, and so they just stop paying. And I think that what we have to recognize ourselves as collectors is that we're also, you know, viewed as financial counselors, and we do help the patients in this scenario to see things that they don't realize are there and the resources that are available for them. And so when we talk about earlier in the call about, you know, building that rapport and working with that patient on their balances, and as, you know, they continue to get additional accounts coming in the system, I think this is a good scenario where it's critical for you as collectors and the managers and trainers and supervisors out there in the world. I think it's important to make sure that that our collectors, that we're educated with respect to our clients as far as their charity care and their financial assistance policies. So in this scenario, specifically relative to healthcare, I think it's important to know, you know, now your same patient is now 7 months in and they are now at a $8,000 balance. And they are a frequent flyer, maybe looking to see, do they qualify for any type of financial assistance? Maybe they do qualify for, you know, some type of charity care. And I think that if you are educated enough to start looking down the different avenues that might be available, again, you're going to continue to have that rapport and that relationship with that patient. And so if the time comes, or when the time comes, that it is tax season or their financial situation improves or changes, you're going to be the first person they call. But I think we tend to get somebody on a payment plan and we just leave it, right? So we get them set up on $50 a month, $89 a month for 6 months, and we just kind of let it go. I think it's critical to always check back in with them, especially as these additional accounts are getting added into the office, to see, has their situation changed? Maybe that payment can increase by $20 or $30, which would help them see the end, you know, the means to the end there, but also looking to see if they do maybe qualify for financial assistance or charity care. Megan, Mike, what do you think?
You stunned them.
Oh, so I thought I lost everybody there for a minute. Man, that's such a hard, getting around those rebuttals are, you know, they're tough. I've dealt with them. You know, I went to the hospital. They gave me a shot. It didn't even work. I'm not paying for it. Well, that's just such a tough one for me, because they're, you know, how do you nicely tell somebody there's no option? Or, you know, I don't know. I am a little stumped on that one. That's always been one. You know, our company, we do mostly government debt. We do some medical debt, but it's just a hard one to people to realize and get. And the whole, we deal with a lot of the parent situation. You know, I took them, but my ex-wife is the one that has to pay the bills. And, you know, you get into a lot of that, and it can be months to get a bill paid by the time you go back and forth and back and forth till finally somebody pays it. So those are really hard scenarios to deal with.
So I think one thing is also knowing your client's settlement guidelines, right? If there are any type of settlement guidelines. So yeah, it's challenging when they say that shot was too expensive, or there's no way that I don't agree with the charges. I don't agree with how much this actually cost. Knowing your authority, if you can do any type of settlement negotiations, or if your client is willing to entertain a settlement offer. I think that's, you know, a great way to try to overcome some of these that Mike read earlier. And I think also when we're dealing with somebody who is saying, you know, they want to discuss the account with you, but the patient is an adult, you know, try to reach out to the patient. Try to see, hey, you know, your mom called in, or your dad called in, or granny called in, and they wanted to discuss this. Would you, you know, do you want me to go ahead and discuss this account with them? Are they an option for you to help make payment? You know, there's nothing wrong with asking that. If you've got somebody calling in that wants to pay the account, trying to get that consent from the actual consumer or patient.
Yes, agreed. We do a lot of that also on our, you get grandma on the phone, or mom or dad, you know, and you can kind of tell when they feel a little sympathetic, and then it's hard to say, no, we can't talk to you about this, because they're probably going to be your payer. They're probably the one that, if you said, oh, well, you know, Johnny's got a hospital bill, he's got a balance of $400. They're the ones that are like, oh, hold on, just let me grab my credit card and I'll take care of that. So we do a lot of getting a hold of the RP and saying, hey, you know, your mom wants to talk to us about this. We're more than happy, you know, to get with her and everything. So
that does help because, you know, especially around Christmas, we find that, you know, grandma and grandpa want to pay off Johnny's speeding ticket or, you know, here's your Christmas gift. We're paying it for you. So getting that consent to speak to those people is huge. We do a lot of that.
Yeah, they can be pretty mind numbing, all the responses you hear, especially medical debt. But I will add just a couple things that, you know, getting permission to speak with a third party, if you can do that on the fly, that can be a powerful tool. So if it's with the consumer and they're saying their parents are going to pay, offering to conference call their parents, getting the permission right then and the conference call, and then vice versa. Like third party, maybe they don't even want to give you the consumer's number, but they want to know about the debt. Well, I'm happy to explain why we're calling. Let's conference call, right? Read your disclosures, get permission, try to move that conversation forward. And then the other thing is talk to your clients and see how they feel about conference calls, because there's few things as powerful as conferencing the client on and having them explain the charges if that's the objection. Because now you've got a consumer who you've taken away all the objections to pay, hopefully. If I knew what this was for, of course I'd resolve it. Well, having that conference call with a client who explains everything, and it maybe takes 3-4 minutes, if they're open to that, can be a powerful tool as well.
Well, and I think part of our underlying theme too seems to be, you know, we don't want to have just our blinders on, right? We want to make sure that we're staying focused and open on any other opportunities or avenues that we can take to really get that account recovered.
A question that came in on this scenario: does your client master file indicate what they will accept with permission and without permission? It helps the collector to know what they can counter offer.
Yeah, so I will say none of our clients give us the permission to negotiate on their behalf. We do take settlement offers, but we have to go to all of our clients with those offers for approval. A lot of times, you know, they'll accept if they were, you know, it was their copay or something like that. But a lot of times the hospitals are giving like uninsured discounts, and they don't want to take any more off after that. So we have to go to our clients with every offer and present that to them. But it is something that, you know, the collectors can still use as a tool. You know, well, you know, are you able to offer a settlement that we can take to our client, you know, and why, you know, why, explain to me why you need to offer a settlement, you know, so that I can go back to the client and say, hey, this is the position they're in, this is what they can do, so that we can help you get this resolved.
And I have it both ways, where I do have some of my clients, actually a lot of my clients have some type of blanket settlement authority guidelines that we can follow. But whether they give us that authority or whether they don't, they're always, I mean, in my experiences, they'll always entertain an offer, right? So there's no harm in trying to suggest a settlement or propose that offer. And if the client denies it, they do, but maybe they'll counteroffer, right? So that's always an option as well.
Okay, moving on. Our next scenario. My scenario is dealing with an angry consumer who is disputing the debt by stating they do not owe it. What questions should we ask? What keywords to listen for? What are the best ways to respond and not always jumping to get a signed contract or itemized statement?
Well, first of all, an angry consumer, what is that?
I know, put my surprise face on.
we never have those.
One of those before.
Yeah, I never spoke to one of those before. Angry consumers, you know, though, in my position now, I only get them when they are so angry that there's nobody else they can speak to but me. And I'm telling you, I find that angry consumers will give you more information than non-angry ones.
Yep.
You know, they get going and they get firing, and, you know, and it goes from I've never been to that hospital to, well, I was there, I had to wait 25 minutes to, you know, well, the doctor didn't pronounce my last name right. Like, they, you know, and then you can circle back around to, okay, so now that we both understand you owe it, you know, but I find that I get a lot of information from angry consumers.
I would say it's a good point about the information, because a lot of times you'll be able to use that as part of your talk-offs. You know, if you kind of tuck some of those little nuggets away, depending on the industry, assuming this isn't specific to medical, but they might say that, you know, I canceled that those services January 1st, and then 3 minutes later, you can bring up the fact that, well, that's fine if you canceled it in January, but these services are from December. So a lot of that information can be useful, but I would say whatever your process is, just training the staff to follow it and try to, you know, not get caught up in those distractions. You know, if from Hello they're saying I dispute it, pretend that they're saying they want to pay. Like I would treat those you know, very different introductions, I want to pay and dispute, I'd treat them the same insofar as you can, realistically. But a dispute is a distraction best avoided. When you can't ignore it any longer, I get it. Usually I'm going to go to something along the lines of, thank you for sharing. You know, I'm glad we're calling that case. I'm happy to address that in a moment and then try to move forward, right? So a talk off, let them know that you're acknowledging what they're saying, you're embracing what they're saying, and then pivot to the conversation you want to have. And the conversation I want to have is, we'll get to that in a minute. Let's discuss some other things. You know, if it's verifying their information or what have you. And if you finally, you know, they're not coming off it and you can't really stick to your process as well as you otherwise would want to, then address it head on. You know, and I do that along the lines of, you know, help me to understand what's been happening up until this point before they decided to hire us. You know, so you're giving them that opening and that platform. That's what I mean by addressing it head on. But then you're also reinforcing the fact that, you know, there's a third party collection agency involved. They've spent money to hire us, right? Without saying those words,
right?
You know, help me understand what's happening up until this point before they decided to hire us. You know, so to kind of get them to think twice, but also give them the platform to kind of vent.
Well, and I also like to impress upon collectors too that, you know, when you're talking to somebody on the phone, obviously you want to do your due diligences. If they're saying they don't order, they dispute it, you want to do your due diligences to determine the proper route that should go, right? So, of course, if it is a blanket dispute, there's no getting past it, you're going to need to substantiate the debt. You're going to need to follow policy and procedures and make sure that you're doing what you need to do, right? But one thing here that I just want to touch on is that a lot of times, it can be just a stall. And so, you know, to as a collector to just automatically jump to, okay, so you don't feel you owe this, or you don't remember this, let me go ahead and send you out an itemized statement, or let me get you a copy of the signed contract or a detailed bill, where sometimes you might have enough information in your system to respond with that detailed information. Well, this looks like the contract was signed on January 1st. And, you know, as Mike said, you know, you're saying you disconnected services in January, but this, you know, or you disconnected services in January, this bill's through December, vice versa. So, you know, this is why the balance is owed. But kind of giving that account detail why you have them on the phone, more so often than not, will help you to do some kind of first-party resolution on that call and not be so quick to just jump and request an itemized statement or a contract. Ask those questions and really try to keep that conversation going to get the answers there so you can move forward to actually resolving the account with a payment.
Well, and Beth brings up a good point. You know, sometimes the dispute is they're trying to save face, right? I'm not a bad person. I pay my bills. The reason I didn't pay this was because XYZ. That's a great point. If you can have a conversation that lasts longer than 2 minutes, get them to open up and move forward, you know, sometimes you're able to have that, the qualifying them for payment conversation and things like this.
Yeah, and I had that exact scenario this morning. It was over texting, but you know, the girl texted and said, I dispute this. I paid it when I received the ticket. I don't know. Or, you know, I dispute this. That's what she first said. And so I followed up with, okay, can you please explain to me what part of this debt you are disputing? And she came back and said, I paid it the day I got the ticket. Well, and very easily right then I can look and, you know, I could tell her, yeah, I see you did make a $164 payment, but unfortunately your balance was $285. Oh, okay. I think you're right. I'll send a check tomorrow. You know, and it's so sometimes I think you just gotta, well, okay, what are you disputing? You know, and a lot of times the collectors are like, oh, well, they're disputing this. Well, what are they disputing? Are they disputing the amount? Are they disputing the service? Are they disputing the date? You know, find out more of what they're disputing. And sometimes it's a real easy fix, you know? Oh, well, I wasn't at the hospital that day. Well, you know, this is for your son. Sometimes it's just that simple to just take a minute.
Well said. Good advice. Let's move on to our next scenario. I don't think I owe this, but I'm going to pay it so you people will leave me alone.
I'll jump on this one. Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.
What's the problem? No, I understand there's probably some compliance concerns, right? So just make sure on your credit bureau side of things, you're updating that as disputed in either getting it marked as paid later on or deleted or whatever your process is. But I'm okay with that. You know, there again, sometimes it's them saving face. Sometimes they really feel that way. Do I know which? No. Do I care? No. I'm okay with those.
Yeah, completely agreed. I love that. I love when I get checks and on the memo line it says, I do not agree with this bill. It just always makes me laugh because I in the back of my head, I want to say, you know, yes, you do, because nobody pays something they don't,
right.
You know. You're just not gonna pay money on something you know is not yours or you didn't do or there's an issue with or whatever. So it always makes me chuckle a little bit. Or when you get the 5-page letter with the payment, you know, about how you're a sovereign citizen and whatever.
We have the same consumers, it sounds like.
Yeah, I love those.
Yeah, that money spends the same. And if they get satisfaction in getting the last word, that's all right.
Yeah, exactly. I'll send them a paid in full letter. You're welcome.
I would err on the side of caution as well. They're saying they're just still going to pay it. If it's something that you're on the phone with and you try to walk through that dispute with them and try to figure out if it's a legitimate dispute, if you're able to resolve it with the consumer patient, but if you're still not able to, you know, again, follow your compliance procedures, because I've had situations in my previous life where I've had to issue refunds after the fact because they paid it and it was a dispute. And so err on the side of caution with that one for sure.
To that end, we did have a question that came in. Since you cannot post a payment to a disputed account, should you not try to get a resolution before posting any payment without a resolution to the dispute?
Sorry, I was on mute. Yes, you cannot apply payment to a disputed debt or any portion of that debt that is disputed. So definitely, if they're disputing it, again, you want to try to resolve that dispute with that person on the phone. And unfortunately, if it's not able to get resolved and they're still disputing it, follow your company's policies and procedures, follow your client guidelines, mindful of your compliance arena. And, you know, again, I'm a little bit more conservative when it comes to this, but I wouldn't post a payment. I don't know how you, Mike and Megan, feel about it, but I wouldn't.
Yeah, so we're a little different. I mean, if a debt's disputed, is it ever not disputed? So we here's the difference. I'll tell you, we honor, you know, the wind blows from the east, and we mark it disputed, and we honor verbal disputes, and we honor them beyond the 30-day grace period. Like anytime they want to dispute years later, doesn't matter. We call that a dispute, and we'll send validation. So we are posting those payments. It's a risk reward thing. Follow your company protocols. But we are posting the vast majority of those, you know, short of something that's heavily disputed or a complaint or something that's lawsuit bait. We are going to post those.
Yeah, we're going to post those also.
Okay, moving on. Mike, our big scenario is up here now.
Ready.
So let me set the stage a little. This is the first call you've made on the account, and when they answer, you're already having difficulty with the consumer verification portion of the call. She is hesitant to ID herself. Who's this? What's this about? Is this a scam call? How would you approach this?
So if I may, let's add a little more context. So this is Miss Wilma Oppenheimer. She's a widow, lives in Connecticut, cares for 16 cats, and is a connoisseur and eccentric of edible exotic shellfish. She's down with OPP, but don't know me. So don't think for a minute that if I hear a cat scratching around a food bowl, I'm not going to hesitate to mention that as a kid, I wanted to take a barn cat home, but alas, I was allergic, and I ended up taking home rabies instead. So here's the thing. Here's why I mention all that. Rapport, right? Rapport. So really the 30,000 foot view, the big picture, we're training our staff to keep a few things in mind. every time they make a call. So mean what you say without being mean. Words matter, voice inflection, tone, sincerity, all that, right? So we encourage collectors to find their voice, use their personal situations if they can in the call to build rapport. You know, we can't control what someone else is going to say, but we can control how we respond to it. We tell those to collectors in training that no one can make you angry unless you give them the power to do so. And there's obviously reasons why they're still on the phone with you. So with someone who's apprehensive to confirm their ID, we try to kill them with kindness and really explain why we're being opaque. So it'll sound something like, you know, ma'am, I'm really happy to explain everything. I will add that this is a personal call from Ms. Oppenheimer, and we'd like to respect her right to privacy. Right?
Okay.
So the fact that I'm showing respect, whether or not it's the consumer, doesn't matter to me. I'm going to deliver that because I don't know. But oftentimes you'll see that they'll open up and confirm who they are. You know, if they know that there's a reason why you're not divulging everything to them from hello.
Okay, so you've done that. You've hit your legally required disclosures. You mini-Mirandize them, and you let them know the call is being recorded. You then proceed with the call, and you hear something like the following. I've got to go. I'm busy. I'll call back later today and pay. Unless the consumer is saying they answered the phone during an inconvenient time and or at an inconvenient place, how would you get the conversation back on track?
Yeah, it happens all the time. And as Beth said earlier, the important thing is to remember that this may very well be not only your first, but your last conversation with the consumer. So that cannot be overstated. You know, it's really your first and maybe only chance to collect it. So we reply with something like, I completely understand. I certainly appreciate the time. This won't take long. Now, a couple things here. When you deliver won't take long or a talk off similar to that period, won't take long period, you can't hesitate and wait for a response. So if you wait, that's a conversation killer. So what we say is deliver the rebuttal and immediately start to talk about what you want to talk about. So we said earlier about have the conversation what you want to have, deliver the talk off, have the conversation you want to have. You want to discuss the debt, helping them resolve it, so talk about that. Really what you are is a bus driver. Right. So that's the metaphor. And just like Ron Livingston's character, Peter Gibbons, in Mike Judge's film Office Space, you need to take your audience on a journey. You know what the most effective route is. And you can't be taking detours every time someone wants a Starbucks or a McGriddle.
Ooh, Starbucks sounds good.
See, distraction.
Yeah. I'm on your bus.
I'm a Starbucks junkie, so count me in.
Yeah,
so go ahead.
I think a big thing is, you know, and as much training as I've been through and everything is that pause and, you know, the questionable pause and stuff is they teach it so much, you know, you need to pause and wait. But in that scenario, you're exactly right, Mike. You gotta keep going. They've already told you they don't have time. So now's not the time for, you know, for waiting and questions and everything. Now's the time to just, okay, not a problem. I give it, you know, I need a minute here to talk to you about this hospital bill. You got a $200 balance. Can we go ahead and take care of that real quick?
Yeah, that pause has come later when you're negotiating payments.
Yep.
Okay. Let me move along. Let's see. So we have the apprehension right out of the gate. Then when they hear what the call is about, they rush to try to end the call. You're able to get past that. So what about the curveball? What if they then say, if you think for 1 minute that I'm going to tell you where I work, you're crazy.
Oh, you almost swore, Mike. Bat guano crazy. That's right. here's the thing. You know, she's obviously, her guard is up. We know that. It's fine. I mean, it's really no different than any other first contact, other than the fact that you know it and she's telling you, right? Their guard is always going to be up at some level. There's going to be apprehension and anxiousness. She's just expressing hers. So the consumer is expecting the collector to be brash and crass, right? So my advice is use it. Use it, but not in the way you may think. So use their preconceived notions about the profession and turn it on its ear. So here's the example. So I would really reply with something along the lines of, you know, Ms. Oppenheimer, I apologize for asking you that if you find it intrusive. And just to pause for a minute there. Yes, apologize. Apologize. Why? Because it's a nice thing to do? Sure. But apologies are going to allow you to get the consumer to drop their guard. and it's going to serve as a platform to show empathy and build rapport. So that's what we mentioned earlier, is building rapport. Well, this is getting you one step closer to that. And I'll add that, you know, that type of pattern interruption is going to be a great tool for dealing with someone who's stuck in the non-payment lane. So explain yourself, offer them a choice, whether either answer gets you closer to the goal. It's kind of like a Hobson's choice or false choice. So here's what it sounds like. I apologize for asking that. If you find it intrusive, the questions are only used for the purpose of collecting the debt, not the least of which is to qualify you for a payment plan. If you need assistance, we're happy to help with that. If you'd rather just pay the debt off today, we can help you with that if you prefer. So a couple things there. A nimble rephrasing of the mini Miranda. It's truthful, but it makes sense, right? Questions are only used for the purpose of collecting the debt. And then the Hobson's choice. You know, you want to be qualified for a payment plan, or do you want to pay it off today? Obviously, you need to work on your tone and things like this. But obviously, that's going to get you closer to an outcome that you're looking for.
Okay. I would like a payment plan, but I'm on a fixed income and I just can't afford to pay this.
Okay. So first of all, to that, I would say don't react to comments like this argumentatively by telling them the litany of reasons that they should pay, right? You deliver a normative statement to a consumer who's heard it from six other agencies that they have to pay this. I think you're just going to fan the fire of Complaintville, really. But guilt works, but it's only going to work on the people who would probably pay anyway. What I'm interested in is, you know, developing collector skill sets so they can bring home the ones that few others would or can. So instead, a better angle is going to be to embrace what they're saying. So you heard me say this before, embrace what they're saying, acknowledge what they're saying, and then pivot, right? So more opportunities to build rapport, et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to sound something like this. Wilma, may I call you Wilma? I appreciate you sharing with me that you're on a fixed income. Thank you. Thank you, Wilma. It sounds like you're on a fixed income. It sounds like resolving this is important to you. In fact, I'm glad we're speaking today because I can tell you that we've helped people in similar circumstances to yours. So a couple things there, right? So when I say help you, that's just my Midwestern enunciation. It's really help you, not help ya. But if you use contractions, it's going to sound more casual. So we, we've, we're, good pronoun uses, things like that as well.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. We get a lot of that. And early on, that was kind of a big, you know, the collectors would say, well, they tell me they're on a fixed income. What am I supposed to do? They can't pay me. Well, first thing you do is, you know, sympathize with them. Say, hey, you know, I completely understand. I appreciate you telling me that. And luckily, you know, we've got payment plans for, you know, all payment types. So no matter, you know, how tight things are or whatever, we can get you on something that can help you resolve this without, you know, putting you in a financial burden. And so I think once they learn just to empathize with them, you know, it's if they're telling the truth, you know, it's a real issue to them, and it may not be an issue to our collector, but it is to them. So I think just stepping back and, you know, I completely understand. I want to help you with this so we can, you know, get this one off your plate. You know, I think that goes a long way with rapport.
Well, and that kind of ties into one of my favorite ways to, you know, correspond back with the consumer or patient is the feel, felt, found method, right? And you both really kind of touched on that when you say, you know, I understand how you feel, Wilma. You know, I spoke to somebody just the other day who felt the same way. And what they found was this solution, and that seemed to work for them. And so, again, you're kind of building that rapport, and you're letting them understand. You're having a little bit of empathy with them, right? You're understanding their position, and you're here to work with them and help them out.
Right. Okay, excellent. So it sounds like there's a lot of psychology in phrasing your responses like this. You want to unpack that for us, Mike?
Yeah, so just a few things. You know, I want to lead with respect, you know, explicit respect this time. You know, even if her guard's still up a little, and even if she says, no, you can't call me Wilma, it doesn't negate the fact that I showed her respect in asking, right? And really what I want to do is crack a joke if your answer is no. You know, may I call you Wilma? No. But I completely understand. No one would be caught dead calling my grandma Miss Bentley either, you know? But just to kind of build that rapport a little bit, soften it up. little anything that you can do to show them that A, I'm here to help, B, I'm a person just like you, and showing the empathy and that you do care, like Beth and Megan were saying. She also mentions would like a payment plan. She tipped her hand, right? So use it. You're reinforcing what's important to her, quote unquote, right? So expressly saying that here's what I'm hearing you say, it's important to you, is defining it precisely what's in it for her, right? So by phrasing it in terms of what's important to her, you can kind of use that framework for this is now what's in it for you when you pay us or choose to pay us or choose to work with us. And obviously there again, we're here to help. And you hear those words, right? Help, 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 we're here to help. A good mix of pronoun usage. So I'm saying may I call you Will Mike, I completely understand. But then I'm also using words like we and we're, so us, all of us are here to help you, you know, the whole lot of us. And then the other thing here is, you know, having knowledge that other people on fixed incomes are paying their debts to us, that's going to create a subconscious motivation. So it's not going to motivate 100% of the consumers you speak with, but it will motivate a significant amount, you know. And I won't bore you with all the studies, but they did research in the early 2000s and they tried to get people that lived in sky rises to recycle. And, you know, they put flyers on everyone's door. And in these sky rises, they started off at 30% of the tenants were recycling. And some of the flyers said, you need to recycle now, you know, do it. Other ones said, it's good for the environment and your great kids and grandkids, yada, yada, yada. But the one that worked the best was the one that said, did you know 70% of the people in your building recycle? And the numbers doubled overnight. So just having that knowledge that someone else in a similar circumstance to them is paying it is going to get you to move that needle a little bit. And then lastly, words like I appreciate, I'm glad, they're all niceties. They're going to elevate the call, not just into polite social etiquette, but into a trust relationship, right? So if you're a fan of, you know, Chuck Palahniuk and Fight Club, he refers to narrator refers to Tyler Durden as his single serving friend. Well, that's what it is, right? It's a single serving acquaintance that you have on the phone. So make the best of it, you know?
Okay, excellent. Well, let's skip to the end. Wilma agrees to pay, or but she doesn't like the idea of setting up payments over the phone. She says, I'm going to mail them in. My grandson told me never to give my account information to anyone over the phone. He said there's all kinds of scams and fraud these days. What then? How do you convince her that it's in her best interest without crossing the compliance threshold?
Ah, there it is. Yep. So first things first, embrace it. You heard me say that. You know, it's, a lot of times we're going to be impulsive to try to tell them all the reasons that they should pay, all the countervailing arguments. I'm going to tell her that, you know, Ms. Oppenheimer, it sounds like you got a pretty intelligent grandson there. You know, I'm going to embrace it. And this is going to do two things. It's a compliment twice over, right? Because the grandson shares genetic material with her and it's her grandson. So I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to joke around a little bit if I can. Flattery is going to get you everywhere. But then you want to further isolate the objection. You know, so if it weren't for the apprehension due to potential fraud, you'd have no problem setting up a payment plan with us. That's where you're going to pause for a response. That's where you're going to use time for her to respond. And then I'm going to follow up regardless what she says, right? My game plan is to say, you know what? He's not wrong about fraud. You can't be too careful. In fact, the number one source of fraud in the U.S. is mail fraud. And that statistic is still true to this day, by the way. But if you read between the lines, what am I saying? I'm saying if you're really worried about fraud, the last thing you want to do is mail me a payment. You want to pay it over the phone if you're worried about fraud, right? But I'm going to continue with something along the lines of, you know, we deal with very sensitive information. As a licensed company, it's critical for us to have checks and balances in place for the thousands of payments that we process every month. I'm happy to re-explain all the precautions we take in setting up a payment plan, if you like. A lot of times we find that that's enough to kind of get them over that hump. If you did a good job negotiating payments up to that point, certainly. Personally, I want the staff to be reiterating, you know, that securing a plan by definition means setting it up over the phone. If you can't do that, there's some people that they're going to be steadfast, then I kind of move on to plan B. And I'd say something like, you know, ma'am, we really want to help you resolve it. Is there any way that we can possibly work something out? I'm going to pause again, let her respond. And then I'm going to call her bluff, right? So with your permission, I'd be happy to conference call your grandson on the phone and explain this to him. After all, he's the one giving her advice, you know. Chances are she's not going to take me up on that, but the fact that I'm offering it means something. And depending on the individual, it's going to mean more or less. And lastly, I know we're wrapping up here. If I absolutely can't get her to do what's in her and our best interest, then I'm gonna transfer, give her the opportunity. So I think we can help you resolve this. Mailing in a payment or promising to mail in a payment won't constitute a payment plan, but we'd be happy to apply those payments towards your balance if you do. I'd like to have you speak with someone else. Transfer to another collector. Let her reinvent herself. I can't tell you how many times someone will not pay over the phone. You transfer them, they completely reinvent themselves.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Mike. Beth, Megan, anything you want to add on top of that?
I don't think I could have said it any better, to be honest with you.
I agree.
Flattery will get you everywhere.
Yeah. Starbucks. I get one. That's it.
Yeah, we're stuck on Starbucks now.
Squirrel.
Excellent. Well, we've gone over a couple of minutes, but before we wrap up, what I want to do is give each of our panelists a chance to share any parting words of wisdom, key advice, takeaways, summary, their best, you know, Christmas cookie recipe, whatever they feel like sharing. Before we wrap up today, if you don't mind, Megan, would you mind going first?
No, I think the major thing with this whole webinar, which is a great topic, I think a few key things to remember is to try to connect with the person, to have empathy, to take the time to understand their situation, and then get them, you know, get them vested, get a payment today, set them up, maybe wait 6 months, tell them you'll call them back, we'll see what we can do, you know, if we can up it then. But I think a big thing is rapport, you know, because like we've said, there's a lot of frequent flyers out there. And once you've gotten that rapport the first time, then you should have that rapport for every other account that comes in.
Awesome. Excellent. Thank you very much. Mike.
Yeah, a couple things. So if you want to hear someone get upset, just tell them to calm down. It works every time. I mean, empathy takes skillful delivery. You got to work on it. You really need to work on it. If that means role playing in your office, listening to calls, I think all these things are good strategies to help you kind of develop that skill set. But I do think that good collectors do what great managers do. They start by building relationships. They work on rapport, they work on trust, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's my biggest thing is just if the collectors can use their own personality and really find their voice and relate to the consumer on a personal level, that doesn't mean you have to divulge personal details of your life, but relate to them on a personal level, right? A personal story that they can relate to. It's going to go far, and it doesn't take long, 60 seconds, 90 seconds, 2 minutes. It can go a long way.
Awesome. Excellent. Thank you very much. Beth?
So I guess my keynote, it would be to stay open-minded. Try to think out of the box when you're dealing with these types of challenges, when you're trying to negotiate. And always, again, make sure you work on building that rapport and, you know, Q-tip, quit taking it personal, right? Remember, no matter what the challenge is, you're not the underlying root cause, right? They're not upset with you. They're not mad at you. They may be upset or frustrated with the situation, and they just really want some solutions and your help.
Excellent. Well said. Well, Megan, Beth, Mike, thank you so much for sharing your insights and your time and answering the sort of sharing your perspective on these scenarios today. Really appreciate it. Also want to thank PDC Flow one more time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.pdcflow.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated, asked questions, and stuck with us to the end. A final reminder to take a minute and fill out the feedback survey for any ideas or tips on future webinars, topics that you'd like to hear from. I also, a recording of this event will be posted to the webinar recordings page on accountsrecovery.net in the next day or so. I hope everyone stays tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. I hope everybody has a safe rest of the day, weekend, and holiday season. Panel, thank you so much. What a great way to end the 2019 webinars. Awesome job.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animals.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.